The blessings of love unrestrained we offer to all, in times past and present, who have opened the doors of wisdom, reuniting all beings with their intrinsic purity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. The recitation of this rosary ever expands the awakening of faith in the three jewels, Bodhi, Dharma, and Sangha. Bodhi Saranam Gacchami, Dutyampi Tatyampi Sabaha. I turn to the perfect nature of truth for guidance. Again and yet again may it be so. Dharmam Saranam Gacchami, Dutyampi Tatyampi Sabaha. I turn to the teachings for guidance. Again and yet again may it be so. Sangram Saranam Gacchami, Dutyampi Tatyampi Sabaha. I turn to the holy order for guidance. Again and yet again may it be so. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Dukkha, the noble truth of suffering. Dukkha Samudaya, the noble truth of the origin of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha, the noble truth of the extinction of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha Gamini Patipada, the noble truth of the path that leads to the extinction of suffering. So long as these four noble truths are not understood, we shall wander in sorrow and ignorance. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. All formations are transient, anicca. All formations are subject to suffering, dukkha. All things are without a self, anatta. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Namo prajna paramita hridaya, homage to the wisdom in the heart. Form is not different from emptiness. Emptiness is not different from form. This is the teaching of our spiritual ancestors, Gautama Buddha, and all the great teachers who have transmitted the Dharma to this holy day. Blessed is the knowledge of emptiness. Homage to the devotees of this and all paths of self-purification. May all find simplicity, the joyous and practical guide. The Dharma, being the contents of enlightenment, in which there is no bondage and no suffering, offers freedom from the cankers of ignorance and fear. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Sangha is the holy order of spiritual ancestors, monks, priests, and all those who follow and practice this path. Homage to the Sangha. Homage to all who are approaching this holy path. Homage to all who follow and establish this holy path. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. By compassionate comprehension that dissipates delusion, by compassionate aspiration that harms no one, by compassionate speech that makes for clarity, by compassionate self-discipline that brings no regret, by compassionate livelihood that brings no discredit, by compassionate endeavor that results in goodness, by compassionate mindfulness that proves this path, by compassionate awareness that leads to nirvana. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confirm my acceptance of these three pure precepts: the precept of restraint and religious observances, the precept of obedience to all good laws, the precept to benefit all sentient beings. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confirm my acceptance of these 10 grave prohibited precepts: not to lead a harmful life, nor to encourage others to do so, not to take that which is not given, not to commit or participate in unchaste conduct, not to tell lies nor practice believing the fantasies of authority, not to use intoxicating drinks or narcotics, nor assist others to do so, not to publish other people's faults, not to extol oneself and slander others, not to be avaricious in bestowal of the teachings, not to be angry, not to speak ill of this religion or any other. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. In the practice of loving kindness, in the practice of pure attention, in the practice of ever-expanding faith, in the practice of constant devotion, in the practice of inquiry through correct dhyana, in this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Oh, happy blessed day! Oh, happy blessed place! Oh, happy blessed time. O happy blessed path. O happy blessed opportunity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Here in humble submission, in order to experience this most perfect now, I deeply vow and sacrifice all thoughts, all tensions, all pressures, and desires. I am born of karma. I am heir to karma. I abide in karma, and I am supported by karma. Whatever I do creates karma, and I shall surely experience this karma. The merit for all good acts I do freely offer to all beings. Dutiyampi tatiyampi sabaha. Again and yet again, may it be so. Willingness is the name of the key to the gate of awakening. For even to awaken from deep sleep and face the new day, there must be the willingness to do it. Here in my hand is the opportunity, and the way is clear beyond the gate of thought and desire. There is no self and other, as the awareness of pure, undisturbed consciousness slips into all consciousness. We are here to end suffering. If ending suffering is more important than anything, we will end suffering. If ending suffering is not more important than anything, we will not end suffering. If I am suffering, it is because I am choosing something over ending suffering. We are not here to create and cling to beliefs. We are here to pay attention. We are here to use everything in our experience to see how we cause ourselves to suffer, so we can drop that and end suffering. So what should we look at this morning?
Nothing's wrong.
Nothing's wrong is good. What's up?
Yeah. And yeah. So yeah, nothing's wrong. And maybe just that, in fact, that every moment offers me the opportunity to wake up and in suffering.
Not only there's nothing wrong, but like every moment is this opportunity to wake up and end suffering.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. It's a whole shift in the attention from looking at something wrong all the time to the possibility that each moment presents.
Yeah, an opportunity, mm-hmm. A real opportunity. And it is a shift because I realize it. And not that, conditioned mind does come in, of course, with some content that things will snag me, mm-hmm. and that I lose it and then come back. But I'm realizing that it takes a lot of energy to support something's wrong. Mm-hmm. And a lot of energy.
Yeah. It's good to see that, how much of our life force is siphoned off in that effort to maintain that nothing wrong view of the world, when in actuality our authentic being is, there is nothing wrong. Yeah. It's all perfect. So.
It's all perfect, and just the feeling that there's a lot of energy, there's a lot of expansiveness, and also kind of a patience that, if I wait. Like, I don't know what that really means, I kind of know what that means a little bit. This moment offers me an opportunity to wake up, but I don't know how it looks. Mm-hmm. So, but maybe if I wait, if I have a little bit of patience to say, okay, I don't know what it is, but, I'm going to trust that that life will show me what the opportunity is, then maybe something, like that.
Yeah, so just being in this place of openness and letting, being willing to have life inform what that would look like.
Yeah.
And what the possibility of ending suffering would look like. And it sounds like knowing that you don't have to have it all figured out and know what to do, but to just be in that, focusing on that possibility.
Yes. Yeah. And even when conditioned mind comes in with something and I lose the focus of my attention, then there's nothing wrong with that either. So. Anyway, that's what I'm interested in looking at. Thank you.
It sounds like you're just building the circle of acceptance.
Yeah.
And include it all.
Yeah.
Thank you. Todd.
Yesterday was a big practice day.
It's a big practice day.
I say that so often. It seems like every day. Well, it seems like sometimes The day can be just a little bigger.
Sometimes the what?
The practice opportunities can be just a little bigger.
They seem bigger than other.
And yesterday.
Some are more welcome than other, it sounds like.
Yeah. Maybe. Yeah. And I was given the opportunity to contact family and friends for the first time in 4 months. And that's the longest I've gone in my whole life. I'm not being in contact, mm-hmm. in a sense, a social contact with folks in my life outside the monastery. And I was just watching these processes. It was so fascinating leading up to the calls. Well, there were calls and emails. That's a process on its own. Mm-hmm. Who gets a call and who gets an email? You know? Mm-hmm. And then, family got to get calls. They just can't be on the email list. And then it's so funny, the friends, well, you know, are they a close friend or are they just a friend? And so I had this little list. And you know, of course, the monastery is infinitely wise and gives me a limited amount of time, which is perfect. Or ego would have, you know, gone off until, it was really great. It was right in work period and it was just encouragement to within an hour or less. And I had two projects going on as well, which was, it was really all perfect. But conditioning.
So you had a schedule around it.
I had a schedule. It was really great. I felt so supported in that schedule that ego couldn't take me off into better ideas or some other idea of how this communication should go. And then I had this super rush and surge of energy that just prior to making some of these calls and the emails. It was astounding that it was like watching conditioning like it was going to get something. Mm-hmm. Like, it was weird. It's like, all I was going to do...
You say watching conditioning like it was going to get something?
Yeah, like it was going to get something. It was getting contact with the outside world.
Oh, okay.
This is the first contact with the outside world, and right. it was going to feed on something. Mm-hmm. Maybe my family and friends conditioning. I don't know. Mm-hmm. No, I'm not aware of any of them are doing awareness practice yet. So... I brought in an intention of keeping the privileged environment as best I could, and so the attitude of mine was to just the facts, Jim, just the facts, not make it personal.
Just not getting into a whole lot of personal conversation,
yeah.
But keeping it to the facts.
Exactly. The kind of, you know, hey, and you know, this is kind of the purpose of my call, to let you know my time here has been extended, and... This is when there were some stunned silences. And I've accepted full-time monastic practice. And then a couple, well, what does that mean? And I watched their conditioning, because it was my conditioning. You know, I'm projecting on them as they responded.
Because there's a stunned silence, so there's a whole lot of room for
projection
about what's going on.
What's going on with them, and what does it mean to them? And they're just like, well... You know, will we ever see you again? Oh, yeah, absolutely. The monastery encourages visits. And I said, but I don't have any details. And I that was totally honest. I didn't. I said, I have no details. But this is what is so far, this is what I know so far. This is what I can tell you. And it was so interesting to see that when they got over the initial shock, there was this great sweetness. Mm-hmm. Every person said, I'm really happy for you. I'm really excited for you. I know you've talked a lot about this. I know you've been going there for years, you know. And you know, each call was quite brief, really, too. It was sweet. And once the details were kind of out, you know, and then kind of got into a little bit of social stuff, I would say, well, you know, the encouragement is to make these calls brief. And, you know, I'm in a work schedule right now. So, you know, I'm going to have to let you go. And they were understanding with that. Because, you know, I've kind of told them a little bit about the schedule on there. They're like, ooh, wow. So they kind of know that there are parameters that we're guided with. But it was really an interesting thing to see people's responses and how I was able to stay with myself and not go into that habitual social place that I normally go with family and friends. You know, certainly they were saying, oh, and so-and-so had a baby, and, oh, they, you know, this is happening at work, you know, because they wanted to sort of bring me up to speed.
Sure.
And then I got to have a little reflective listening buddy call. So I'd say, oh, so this happened at work, yeah. Oh, and so-and-so had a baby, yeah, oh, great. Mm-hmm. And, oh, so they went to Cancun, oh, cool. So that was nice to see, mm-hmm. that I didn't have to, you know, I didn't ask any personal questions, mm-hmm. you know, and all in all, it was, and it was so, it's so perfect, but by the time that the calls were made and done, I looked, I had about 5 minutes left in the work practice. It was like, it was exactly the amount of time I needed, mm-hmm. you know, it didn't need to go off into anything else.
They have an opportunity to practice, and it sounds like an opportunity to look at the deepening of your practice.
Yeah.
And just seeing how that you were able to be with the folks that you care about and
yeah.
have this reflective listening.
Yeah.
And to really stay, it sounds like, to just take care of or stay true to the
yeah.
person that was doing this. Actually, what sounded like, you know, a hard thing. There was some difficulty in it.
Yeah, there was certainly a little fear around the ones that I felt maybe would have the most reaction.
Mm-hmm.
Some family and some very close friends I've known for decades. That their reaction might be kind of strong.
Mm-hmm.
But
and experiencing sweetness.
There was
acceptance.
And what I noticed, most of the people said, "Wow, that." They projected on me the dedication and commitment it takes to do that. And these are very dedicated and committed people I project. And that was neat to see. Because they're projecting, wow, that takes a lot of commitment. And, well, you're really dedicated. And, of course, I said, well, would you really doing that projection? Of course, I didn't. But I was thinking, these folks that I know, in what they're doing,
mm-hmm.
I would project on them very dedicated and committed people.
That's interesting.
Yeah. And it was funny how they were projecting that on me.
Right.
And it was relieving themselves. So it was a huge, just a huge practice opportunity and a projection exercise and a privileged environment opportunity within the environment of the monastery, but in dealing with the outside world, which I've had no workings with
mm-hmm.
for quite a while. Mm-hmm. So I appreciate that opportunity.
So you went there and you returned, and it sounds like conditioning was there, kind of rubbing its hands
yeah.
together, hoping to get something for itself. And it
yeah.
sounds like
yeah.
it did not.
It didn't.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, what just dropped in is it felt clean.
Clean.
It felt clean. I, when it was done, it was like, yeah. And there was nothing left over for conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't get what it wanted.
Mm-hmm.
It was to just feed itself.
Mm-hmm.
It felt like leading up to it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's good.
Thank you.
Thank you. The word sweetness came up, and I just had a sweet experience this morning. And just listening to what was said, it brings up the notion of sangha. You know that there's the practicing sangha, and then there's the kind of personal sangha that over the years, you know, the people have kind of just been there, you know,
mm-hmm.
right? And at Christmas, I got a Christmas letter from a friend that, gosh, I knew him back in church circles, 30 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And we were in a very wonderful little study group together. And the message was that from the woman that their husband had died. Last year. And so this morning I wrote her a note. I wrote her a letter. And similarly, what part of what reminded me was that I did it right before group, so I had about 10-15 minutes, you know. And rather than getting into the, oh, what shall I say, I just sat down and started writing.
Mm-hmm.
And what I was appreciating as I was writing was these are people I have not seen for 30 years. And every year I get a Christmas letter, and they get a Christmas letter. But always I have known that I was supported by them.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yes.
And it feels like I was just feeling a gratitude for that kind of community of people out there that I know care, and I know have always sort of been champions
mm-hmm.
for this being.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't require much contact.
Mm-hmm.
But I felt kind of like supported in a net, you know,
yes.
And similar to sangha, but just sort of a different sangha,
mm-hmm.
and grateful to have the opportunity to take the time just express that, you know, to express how much I appreciate that, and to make that connection. It felt really simple and easy and really important.
Yeah, a couple things came up with that, you know, just that I know from my own experience how conditioning would make that a really big deal to sit down and write to somebody I hadn't written to in 30 years over something that, you know, a big event in their life, like the death of a spouse. Mm-hmm. And to just, like was spoken earlier, hold it in a container of, you know, mm-hmm. the schedule and, you know, I've got this much time, and to just let the heart speak.
Yep.
And to have that experience with them. Yeah. And it could have been something that would have been carried on for days and weeks, you know, needing to do this thing. Mm-hmm. And to just the benefit of practice, to know the value in just being here in the moment and doing it and
yeah.
what arises.
And it only takes a moment, you know. Mm-hmm. Another thing that's come up is we have a group of women that we've gone hiking with in England for years, and they visited last summer, and we had this wonderful visit. Two of them are in their late 70s. And a couple of months ago, one of them had a stroke. Mm-hmm. So first of all, I felt huge gratitude that we saw them this summer and had this great experience with them. So, you know, it came to the attention in our household that someone, a practice that someone had adopted with a friend, or sending a poem every day. Mm-hmm. So you don't have to sort of say something every day, but so we've pretty much done that. Mm-hmm. And that also has felt the same way. It's like, I don't even know if anybody reads into her or she sees them or anything. But there's something important to me about just saying, every day I think of you. You know, every day you're... Mm-hmm. in my awareness, and hopefully, you know, that's the message that's conveyed whether she likes the poetry. You know, it's been fun to go through the poems and find poems that, but also just that, it's just that, you know, just that touch base to say you're held. I guess that's it.
It's that web of support that
yes.
you were talking about earlier. Just
yeah.
being a part of that web of support, like everyone is. That you experience for yourself and you are for everyone else. And
yep.
indeed, life is for all of us to just be part of that.
Yeah.
yeah.
And what strikes me as you reflect that is that in neither of those cases is there a sense of drama,
mm-hmm.
which conditioning would.
Mm-hmm.
There's just a sense of caring and warmth.
Caring
yeah.
and warmth.
And just wanting to maintain that clean,
mm-hmm.
use the language, really, that clean connection.
Like you said, in the beginning, sweetness,
mm-hmm.
you know, that's not there when it's accompanying with drama
yeah.
and getting into the story and all of that, but
yeah.
it's just that little sweetness.
Thank you.
That's interesting and helpful to hear that. I think I have some things I need to look at around that,
mm-hmm.
around that secondary, or it's not secondary, but outer sort of sangha that Penny was talking about. I had the experience a couple of weeks ago of we were given this thing to read, and this guy was describing in this thing a very sort of traumatic thing that had happened in his life, and he said something along the lines of, basically, I couldn't have made it through without the support of family.
Mm-hmm.
And when I read that, I was like, I don't have that experience.
Mm-hmm.
I have experienced very much with the more literal form of sangha. I could not be attempting to do what I'm attempting to do at all without the support of the monastery and the monks and the sangha and everybody who's participating. But I don't. Outside of sort of the kind of official sangha, I don't put other people in that category.
Don't feel that kind of. I can't do without the support. Like he was referring to the biological family, you know,
mm-hmm.
and you feel that support with the sangha
mm-hmm.
and the monks and the monastery. But
yeah, and it's you know what I was seeing this was you guys were talking a minute ago is it is there. I just don't acknowledge it.
Mm-hmm.
It's karmic for me. I think. I could give you all kinds of examples of you know I just have not. Like, as I've gone through my life, I haven't brought people along.
Mm-hmm.
There's this guy, I haven't thought about him in a long time, but, you know, he was kind of my closest friend and companion in high school.
Mm-hmm.
And so I saw him every day for hours every day, all the way through high school got done, and I walked off, and I haven't seen him since.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't talked to him since.
Mm-hmm.
like that. I have the just, you know, I basically have, I just don't have anybody out there other than people who, there's one person who I have included voluntarily, a very old friend of mine, but otherwise it's the people who I have a responsibility for, which is biological family, mm-hmm. and that's it. Mm-hmm. And so it occurs to me that there's something for me to look at in there, because I know the love is there. Mm-hmm. There's also a lot of conditioning there mm-hmm. in the relationships, and but I know underneath that is something that's more genuine mm-hmm. that I think I need to acknowledge and have that just bring them into the what I see as that and that in this life and in this world that supports me in my life. Mm-hmm.
To bring them into that which you see in this world that supports you in your life.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And seeing that that maybe there's been a distinction between family and our friends and Sangha, and that there have been some long-term relationships that, what was the term that was just used? That maybe we're not, I don't know if the word is fed or just nourished in any way to maintain them.
Yeah, and it's funny because I can find almost nothing in me that wants to do that.
Almost nothing that wants to do that.
Yeah, and I hear people talking all the time about how difficult it is to not be connected with people in their lives, you know, and I just can't understand it.
I'm wondering if it, because you mentioned it, not having that same difficulty with Sangha and, you know, that kind of support in this environment, but if it had to do something with associating it with conditioning, you mentioned?
Possibly.
Other people's conditioning?
I suppose so. Yeah, I suppose so. I mean, you know, the relationships I have with people here are not personal.
Mm-hmm.
And if they suddenly became personal, I mean, that would be the end of it for me. I would be gone in, you know, days. Because it just, I don't know, it just has always seemed real to me that that's sort of not what I want.
Uh-huh.
Like I got one Christmas card. And, you know, I don't get many, obviously, with this orientation that I have. it was from these people. It's a family they were incredibly supportive to me as a when I was a teenager, and it was kind of my home away from home. My family life when I was a teenager was really difficult because my parents were in the process of breaking up, and I spent a lot of time over at their house because they had a son who was my age, and we were good friends and stuff. And I mean, I feel a debt of gratitude to those people that will go on the rest of my life. I'll never forget that. And I actually wrote them a letter a couple, three years ago telling them that.
Mm-hmm.
And that felt really good. But there still isn't anything in me that wants to go spend time with them.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know, it's just, yeah, it's, I get, that's why I say it's karmic. It feels like it's just a basic life orientation where that is not a part of
mm-hmm.
what is, kind of what seems obvious to me to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's interesting that even though there's no desire to go spend time with them, that obviously they're still part of that web of support for you.
Yeah.
And they've kept the connection.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really feel particularly supported by them now.
Mm-hmm.
Although I know, I suppose, you know, if I got in trouble or something, I went to them and said, I know I haven't seen you in 30 years, but help. I mean, they would do it. They're that kind of people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's just an interesting thing. So I don't know. I think it's kind of a conflict. I had forgotten about it actually. I had that little blip when I read the thing a couple of weeks ago. I forgot about it until I talked about this morning. But I think I'll put it on some recordings. I think it's not as cut and dry as the mind tends to make it.
Mm. So it's a good place to explore and get onto the recorder.
Mm-hmm.
So I've actually been having a workshop around this issue, and I think
around the issue of
just this whole. I mean, let's see. I guess even the way I frame it would be how each of us frames it would be our karma, right? So relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely coming from possibly the other side.
Mm-hmm.
But it's been really interesting because I've been offered this project by Life that I alluded to a bunch of weeks ago that has me being very supported by people in my life. And what I watch is, and I've been having a workshop around relationship for a couple of years now, probably. One of those suddenly realizing, oh no, I have a lot of karma around this, where it's been there forever, you know, my whole life.
But I had just seen it.
Yeah, it's like, it was sort of the water I swam in, right, instead of being able to step back from it and see the suffering there was. And so it's been fascinating to watch that as I sort of began to bring awareness to the issue of relationship, it was very, very painful, mm-hmm, on many levels, because what I saw was the, quote, relationship with, quote, other people was completely taking the place of, for a lack of a better way to say it, my relationship with myself. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so I began, I mean, as soon as I saw that, it was one of those, oh, I've known this for a long time, mm-hmm, even way before practice on some level, but it's never been right up here, mm-hmm, on the conscious level. And as soon as it became conscious, I knew that I wanted to shift that. Mm-hmm. But boy, it was so painful and difficult to do that.
Painful to shift that orientation from, to an orientation, something was being provided with the external relationships that you wanted to have provided, yep, internally for.
Exactly. And so that's actually a good way to reflect it, because it felt like there was a period of time where I felt completely alone. Mm. I was neither here nor there.
And letting go of that old orientation, there was this, mm-hmm, emptiness or.
Yeah. Anxiety, depression, mm-hmm, were two really key daily experiences. Mm-hmm. And as I say that, I can see just so much determination that was happening, mm-hmm, in there. Mm-hmm. You know, in many ways it felt choiceless, what I was going through, but of course, I mean, I could have done a lot of things that would have just said, uncle, forget it, I'll just go back to the relationship. Staying here and doing that isn't an option,
right?
because the compassion and wisdom of this place won't offer that.
Yeah.
And that's that place where it can feel so alone and conflicted, yeah, of like, let me out of here.
in the vice and
Mm-hmm. I guess life and its infinite wisdom, I don't think I could have been going through what I'm going through on a constant level right now had I not had that workshop. Mm,
interesting.
Yeah.
It's like, almost like it was laying the groundwork for this other, yeah, opportunity.
Yeah. Because what I'm finding is this incredible kind of razor's edge, mm, of, I mean, the support being offered to me is very tangible and all around me, and both me and the primary, most of the folks who are offering me that support are also dedicated to it not undermining the practice that I have around all of it.
Wow. So they're really honoring the practice that you have around this opportunity. They're there to support you, mm-hmm, and they don't want to undermine.
I mean, I project that, and it's certainly true for me. Mm-hmm. It's definitely true for me. Mm-hmm. And I mean, so my family is supporting me as well, and that's a trickier place, mm-hmm, right? Because, I mean, really for everyone, because it's, I really have to be, as sort of I project was alluded to earlier, I have to be the one to hold the space of practice, mm-hmm, around it. Mm-hmm. And that's such an interesting place, mm-hmm, where how to ask for the kind of support, yeah, I want, how to be, and it's actually, I hadn't thought about this before, I'm talking about it right now, but it's powerful that that it requires me or requests of me to be the one to hold, in a sense, both simultaneously, that would be the person who's receiving the support, but also be kind of this mentoring presence of not just, okay, take care of me.
Right. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, as you say that, I mean, it's just, it's a very active role. Mm-hmm. It's not like, like you said, just take care of me, you know. But you are required to hold the space for the practice that you are you're in, mm-hmm. and that has been your life. Mm-hmm. And as these folks offer you support, and
mm-hmm. yeah, I guess it's true with really with everything in practice that it's just the commitment gets stronger and stronger not to ever leave the biggest picture I can see in any given moment.
Yeah.
And kind of what we started the morning with, and realizing that picture is always growing bigger, mm-hmm. and that when it feels like a bigger picture is not available and, you know, I slide in the direction I want to go in, there's nothing wrong. That's okay. You know, it's all practice mm-hmm. around it. There's no, I don't have to be careful. And
that's what Virginia started with.
Yeah.
You know, it's all,
it's all part of it.
It's all part of it. It's mm-hmm. all can be accepted. And,
mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, so, yeah, just a lot of gratitude for the way, you know, life, I mean, again, like we started with, life lines things up.
Yeah.
These opportunities that, again, we would never say, you know, I think I want this. but it all just gets put into place so perfectly for kind of what we're ready for next.
We're just not dropped into that place with no preparation.
I'm attending this school of life. That seeing the same thing, that it feels like, for me right now, it feels like a part of my life has ended.
A part of your life has ended?
Yeah. It just feels, I feel different.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I'm not who I used to be, but I don't feel like I'm who I'm becoming yet. You know, I feel like I'm in this kind of a void where something is over. Mm-hmm. And something is fresh.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really know what it is,
mm-hmm.
but there's not really anything holding me, tethering me to anything.
Mm-hmm. Neither the old or
yes.
any imaginings about what the new may be.
Yes. And so, you know, there's just this infinite possibility on mm-hmm. the horizon.
Mm-hmm.
And which could be seen kind of scary at my age, or it could seem exciting. So far, it's feeling pretty exciting,
mm-hmm.
and it feels like
they're really similar. They can be really similar body sensations, can they?
yeah, and it can kind of fluctuate sometimes
mm-hmm.
in there. And you know, I've been consciously working on trust and building my trust in life, and. I think now I'm being called on to apply that kind of trust to this being, to
mm-hmm.
apply how life is will manifest through this being, and trusting myself to, which I actually feel like I was practicing too, to go through the doors as they open.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like doors have closed. I know doors are opening.
As you say that, it just, you know, it, as we practice trusting life, and we're not separate from life, you know.
Exactly.
That same trust extends to what comes next for this form, you know.
It's just kind of an orientation away from looking outward,
mm-hmm.
you know, life is out there and I'm looking for the clues,
mm-hmm.
but allowing myself to acknowledge that this is also life. The clues may be coming from a different, you know, not looking out, but kind of feeling within, you know, that thing, that image that we had where the chick is pecking from the inside and get some help from the outside. And what I had a real lesson recently in that, let's see how to say this, that I was feeling like some doors were closing, I guess that way, and I was just ready to let them be closed and say, you know, acknowledge that that's just the way it was, you know, the doors are closed. And but I kept feeling not like it wasn't. There was still something gurgitating, you know, it wasn't a clean close. There's still something not finished. And so to inquire about that was, it felt very difficult because it felt like the conditioning was telling me not to, that it was over and that there was...
I have to go back there and finish.
Yeah. That the thing to do is to let it go and move forward. And with this whole open direction, you know, I could go anywhere, you know, and just... and so it just occurred spontaneously at a certain point to ask about it. And there was no thought, there was no, you know, it just arose. Mm. And in doing so, what I got to see was what I was listening to about not being able to ask was basically what made that part of my life feel over.
Say that again.
Yeah, that's tricky. The conditioning that was telling me I couldn't ask about this. Mm-hmm. I could not speak mm-hmm. from what was happening within me. I couldn't speak that out loud. I couldn't ask about it. I didn't have a right to ask about it. Mm-hmm. What felt closed was closed because I just messed up, and there's no place for examining that. Mm-hmm. And what I realized was that kind of listening to that kind of messaging was what made it feel closed in the first place.
Okay.
Operating out of that conditioning,
okay.
that this being can't speak, this mm-hmm. person can't ask, this mm-hmm. person can't say what she needs, mm-hmm. this person can't
right.
be seen, actually, basically.
Right. It's the duality. It's like
yeah.
that done over.
Yeah.
You know, can't go back there.
Yeah.
You know.
And even though there was something going on that just wasn't done, there was a belief that I couldn't do anything about that. I just had to suck it up and go somewhere else, you know, and forget it. And it was just grace, because I don't know what made that come out of my mouth, because it wasn't like somebody really prepared it or something. But having done so, I could see that it uncorked the bottle that mm-hmm. had made that whole situation
mm-hmm. just having
up
that,
in the first place.
Just having it spontaneously arise and asking the question, is, and then it uncorked the bottle of the...
Yeah. And it actually took a tremendous amount of courage, because it was going against everything in me mm-hmm. That was telling me I couldn't do that. Mm-hmm. And I just said, well, now that, you know, I can take a risk because, you know, it's over anyway, so what the heck, you know. So, I mean, it's just ironic, you know, because the conditioning itself that created the situation was keeping me from learning about what created the situation.
Mm-hmm. So the condition
is... Is that making any sense to anybody but me?
Okay. So the conditioning that created the situation was what was keeping in place any opportunity to actually end or have closure with the situation? Or
have closure, to understand, to...
Did you have any insight?
To actually have insight on, you know, what... I mean, it's a big thing. I mean, once I even said anything about it, mm-hmm. it didn't even matter what I heard in mm-hmm. response. It was like, oh my God, yeah. I said it.
You broke through this huge piece of karma that just, you know.
Ask yourself.
Yeah.
You ask. It was just like, wow. Why couldn't the being do that? And then I looked back and I thought, that's been a huge problem, mm-hmm. you know. Not being afraid to say, you know, to speak, you know, afraid it's going to, you know, and just not speaking up. Huh. Yeah, so I think it fits in with what the kind of the conversation I seem that we're having.
So the door that closed is the door around fear about just speaking up when you're hearing a lot of things that say that you shouldn't speak up, and you didn't.
Yeah, yeah. And so, well, and even just the perception of how things work.
And how things work.
I mean, you know, the door may or may not be closed, but mm-hmm. if that's just what I'm going to believe, rather than, you know, explore.
Go
and check the doorknob. Is it locked or is it open?
Yeah, just being open.
If you knock, does someone say come in? They say go away. You know?
It's that thing of an infinite possibility.
Yeah.
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 Okay, thank you. Alex.
Yeah, I related to that 100%.
100%.
Yep. Got it. feels like I've had my own experience of that. And it felt like it fell into the category of, if you take a tiny sliver of anything that I do, I will see my entire life everywhere. Yeah. I mean, I know, Sherry, uh-huh. you know, how uh-huh. you do anything is how you do everything. But it's like, it takes one of those moments where it's like, the way I write something in a notebook uh-huh. describes the place that I live in, uh-huh. describes the place that I work in, describes how I think, uh-huh. describes how I dress uh-huh. myself, everything. Uh-huh. And it was one of those moments where I started to lay out, you know, how the conditioning works. And it was coming from a place of, why is this happening the way it's happening? Kind of thinking like there's some kind of objective reality going on here. Uh-huh. And I realized that as I was writing it out, everything was creating the life experience that I was having, even the perspective from where it was being written from was creating it. It's really very interwoven, and it was almost frightening in a sense that when I got it that, wow, none of this is actually going on. And no one's actually seeing it this way, that it's completely made up.
It's completely made up.
And there's something happening to maintain everything that's being perceived.
Uh-huh. Something happening to keep preventing you from seeing that everything is made up and that it's all... kind of programmed, maybe.
It is a program.
And that, yeah. And seeing how that just shows up, even in the smallest slice of life, like how you write in a notebook, any of it.
And as I was writing it all out, I was thinking that I was going to get an answer to what I need to do next. And instead, what I got to see was how it was working.
Wow.
You know, everything that, it was almost like, I really related to, like, you know, I'm going to ask a question for the answer that I think that I'm looking for. Mm-hmm. And in writing that, I'm going to see where it's coming from, that writing, that question is coming from, and that place that it's coming from is what's holding it all together. Mm-hmm. And it was almost like the question became useless.
Irrelevant,
uh-huh. Exactly. It was like, had nothing to do with anything. It was just part of the machine that was holding everything together. Mm-hmm. And I think what it's doing right now is regrouping, because just based on how completely it does not want me to go back and look at that again.
Yeah.
It's like,
of course it's regrouping.
Everything. It's pulling out everything that it's been able to do. To scramble everything. It's like, oh, you didn't see that?
Yeah, so the curtains parted for a bit.
Yeah.
And you saw that, you know, the puppeteer or whatever behind the curtains, and it's
exactly.
Like now trying to put it all back together.
Yeah.
It came up to me as we try not to ask why questions, because you can see how that just keeps you in the in that whole system.
Although in this circumstance, asking the why question got me the ability to see
it did
where
open.
It was coming from.
Yeah.
You know, like, what is it that, I mean, unless that's why people get thrown against the door when they ask it, just that's the next opportunity you wake up and see that that's completely not the issue, because the person who would want the answer is the person who's asking that why question, and that why question is relevant.
Uh-huh.
It's the thing that's underneath of it all.
Yes.
Starting to see process in a whole new way that's exciting when I saw it, and terrifying to conditioning, because it's just like, no.
That is exciting.
Come back.
Yeah. Very exciting, and could see how it would just
freak
out a whole machinery.
Mm-hmm. And it's, I'm just not going to underestimate it any longer, because it just, as you know, I've heard said so many times, it's been with me my entire life. It knows me better than anyone else, or anything else, and it knows. I don't know if I can project consciousness onto what it feels like, but it's like, as it's doing what it's doing, if I can see it as more of how it works rather than as a result of like needing to do something about it, because that's how it's trying to work itself out. It's like it's going to ask me to act out something that's part of it, rather than just stay with it.
Mm-hmm.
And see it. It doesn't want me to stay with it and see it.
Mm-hmm.
Because if I stay with it and see it, it's going to keep falling apart as it's trying to regroup.
Mm-hmm.
And when it regroups, the more I go along with it, the more solid it becomes. I don't know if that made any sense.
Well, it seems as you describe that, you're describing a state of a certain amount of disidentification to be present, to be observing. How it goes along, instead of stepping into it and acting out a particular, and becoming actually part of the prop. I don't know what the word is for it.
The whole play.
The whole play.
Exactly. That's a really good analogy.
Yeah.
Actually, it's almost like every time I go along, the screen comes down and it starts up again, and it brings up, and it's just going.
There's Alex playing a lead role, and you know,
exactly.
And it's just gone.
Tempting color, and everything like that, and then. Every time I sit there and I don't play my part, so to speak, the lights come on, you know, the theater empties. it's harder to actually believe anything that's going on the screen, probably because the light is not responding to it. So it's just a big workshop, actually, because what I'm saying is that it's pulling out the things that are going to be really real.
Yeah.
The really real things that are going to drag me on into it.
Yeah.
To go and act out.
Yeah.
Because it's worked before, I suppose.
Right. So to certainly try it again.
Mm-hmm. And it seems so familiar, and it seems so true. It seems, you know, if it can't get me with this aspect of life, it'll try this one over here.
Mm-hmm.
It'll try out everything that it knows that it will try that will succeed. If it can't be, you know, be a monk, it'll be some other thing, you know, that'll work out, that may have worked out maybe a lifetime ago before, even if it's not something that I want, you know, like it never even occurred to me that it would.
Mm-hmm.
So, very fascinating,
very fascinating, very just, you know, how what we were talking about earlier, that web of support, is just so essential. You know, the support of Sangha, the support of practice as we go through these insights and awakenings. And something else came up. I guess it wasn't important.
It's very helpful.
It's great. Thank you. Thank you.
This has been a very helpful conversation, and I feel like I just saw something that I'm not sure I was looking at directly, but just showed up. And in recent groups, we've been talking a little bit about the image of our life unrolling like a ball of yarn,
yes,
unraveling, like our life is unraveling. And that has certainly been an image that resonated with me. And it's partly unraveling, it's partly an opening, but the shifts are internal, not external. Mm-hmm. And there's not much different that I can see externally. The same tasks face me every day. My days don't look different, but there's something different in me. And I recognize that at the same time that I see the ball unraveling, that there's a corresponding desire to wind it up even tighter, mm-hmm, you know, and say, never mind, and put it back together the way it was. And
I think Jen was talking about a similar thing. It's like, there's that place, like, I can decide to take my ball and go elsewhere and spend the rest of my days with it.
That's right.
Just me and my little ball. Yeah. Just me and my ball forever.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. And I realized that I think I'd been in a story that I hadn't seen until this morning, that the conditioning is telling me that I can't, I can't manifest the unraveled ball as long as the externals are the same. I can't get up in the morning and know that what I have to do is clean the litter box, pay the bills, do the laundry, and, you know, whatever else, and be that person who feels unraveled. Mm-hmm. I need to have, the only way I'll be the unraveled person is to go somewhere else and do something new, and, you know, and I really can't see how I could be a different, mm-hmm, me in the same circumstances that I live every day.
Mm-hmm. The eye is just focused on this place of separation, mm-hmm, and it has to be a whole entirely different,
yeah,
life experience,
yeah,
if that ball is to be unraveled.
Yeah, so I mean, I hadn't quite gotten that. I mean, I was aware that there was some part of me that was feeling a little kind of stuck, you know, like, well, you know, but I think
I'm not ready to move.
Right, or like, how can I just do the same things every day without being the same person every day? Mm-hmm. I'm, you know, somebody really was kind of stuck there, you know, and, so it was very helpful this morning to have that exposed. Mm-hmm. And so what came to me too while we were sitting here is that so I could have a little mantra when I go to participate in one of these familiar everyday activities, that would be, what would the unraveled ball do?
What would the unraveled ball do?
You know, it's like, you know, if I wasn't who I thought I was, who would show up for this task?
Mm-hmm. 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 Sounds like a good opportunity to just take a breath and see what life would maybe show up, mm-hmm, with in that moment, yeah, for that task.
Yeah, because I really have come to see how the world that I live in, a world that I've created, I'm a being that I've created in that world, and now that's kind of beginning to, mm-hmm, mm-hmm, unravel, mm-hmm, you know, kind of like how to maintain that openness to see what's there rather than what I've come to expect. Mm-hmm.
the openness to see what the possibility is instead of, I don't know where the word habit comes from, but you know, what we've been habituated to think of as us and what that day-to-day life of that of us looks like.
Yeah, thank you.
Kim?
I have actually been experiencing that. That's interesting to hear. That many of the things that are in my daily life or what needs to be done around where I live to do life kind of has required a certain way of doing them because of the size of the place I live in, and there's very little wiggle room, literally and figuratively, for new ways of doing things. But I said that I feel different now, and I'm finding that all of these new possibilities are kind of spontaneously arising. As I'm doing something, I'm seeing a different way to do it, that I've been doing the same thing for a long time and doing it the same way, having experimented and got to the best way, you know. And I'm just seeing in a lot of little ways, it's not anything huge. I mean, nothing looks really different where I am, but the process of getting things done, there's more possibility than the conditioned person was allowing for those things. And I'm finding new ways of doing things, and it's fun.
That's great.
It's just kind of interesting. It's like, huh, wow, how come I didn't think of that before? You know, where was that? But they're popping up.
That's great. So, and this, I mean, reminds me of what Nick Mickey was just talking about, how it may not look from the outside like anything's changed. Like you said, you wouldn't notice anything different, but yet everything's changed. You know, there's more possibility, there's more fun.
Yeah, and it's making me wonder, well, how many other things could be different than, you know, without actually having some kind of a, because that's what this whole open space has been, this open, you know, possibility place. It's like, God, I could live anywhere. I mean, even in a different country, really, you know, if I chose. And but then what I was asking myself was, would that be necessary? I mean, or could I, the same question that was just being asked, posed.
Could you live in a different country right where you are?
Yeah. And I'm seeing that it certainly seems so. Uh-huh. Yeah, because it is the processes that we are engaged in that kind of are really what we're doing, not the content. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so if there's a space for creativity to arise and be for it to arise and to provide newness, then you could be that person anywhere. A person who has an open channel to creativity. Yeah. A person who's not allowing conditioning to make everything into a habit.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty exciting.
Yeah, and it's just been kind of, it's more of a result than an aim. It's like something I've noticed after the fact. It's like something is, I can tell I'm different, I feel different. And I'm noticing these things happen where I do things differently, and it's just like so fun. It's like, oh, who would have guessed we could do it that way? And yet it's, well, after you see it, it's like, well, it's obvious, you know? And so that was, I'm really glad that Mickey said that, because I hadn't really acknowledged that really head on, that's happening. And so.
Yeah, I think it was kind of a key point that you said. It wasn't anything that you consciously sought out. You didn't say, oh, I'm going to find new ways to do things. Or, you know, and it was just something that arose spontaneously.
Well, you know, and yet when you said that, Sequoia, I remembered when I was saying one night here, or some time that Cherry was sitting on the cushion, I said something about I'm feeling different, and or something. And she said, change. She said a thing, you know, I always recommend change. And so I have been conscious of that. Uh-huh. I have been conscious of that. I've been making some conscious decisions about things just because I want to do things different.
Uh-huh.
And some things that I haven't even really wanted to do, I really didn't like, but I had an opportunity to do it. I consciously said, I'm going to do it because it's change. Uh-huh. And see, because I think I don't like it because it doesn't reflect me, the me that I think I am. So mm-hmm. I'm going to go ahead and do this.
Uh-huh.
And just experiment with doing something that's really different, that doesn't fit the mold uh-huh. for this, you know.
Uh-huh.
And so, yeah, that may have something to do with it, too.
So someone took the guidance about change, regarding change, and just, you know, sat with it, or, you know, it was there.
It kind of, yeah, like in your consciousness. It's been percolating.
Yeah, percolating.
You know, how can I incorporate change? Because that's part of, part of it is that I feel different, and I want to... It's very easy, as other people have said, you know, the first thing when something's different is ego tries to reconstruct everything and get you back. And so I figure if I can see things that reflect that I'm different or that things are different, it's easier mm-hmm. to acknowledge and to keep that
uh-huh.
going, that energy moving mm-hmm. in that direction rather mm-hmm. than regrouping back into right. the...
It's interesting, it's, again, it's the focus of the attention, like, to look at what's changed. I mean, in this whole vast possibility of places where we can focus our attention, you know, I can see the value in that, of just noticing what's changed.
Yeah, I went right on it, almost as soon as I got back here from being in San Diego, 4 months with my mom dying and everything, I felt really different. You know, I mean, I just felt different. I didn't even recognize when I got to my place. It was like, I remember saying to myself, she lives here. And I said it, she, you know, she lives here. It was just so odd to see this place where she lives. And it's like, wow. And so I had to go in and get my glasses fixed because I injured them during my trip there. While I was there, waiting for the lady who fixes them, she was there. They were having this sale of frames. And I knew that I had to go to the eye doctor and get a new prescription. And so I was wandering around trying on frames while I was waiting for the... And they had a whole bunch of these fancy ladies there, and they were all helping people, you know. So this one fancy lady was following me around. She was real pretty and dressed all, you know, really stylish. And she would know that was not the right color for you. And I don't know anything about colors and stuff, you know. So I'm going around trying, and she said, I put these ones on, and she said, oh, yes. And I looked in the mirror, and I said, really? Okay. I did. I thought, oh, that is just weird. But I thought she was just trying to sell the glasses, right? So then, you know, a lot of other people, you know, this was all kind of fun because everybody was trying on these frames and stuff. And, oh, yeah, those look really great. And so, you know, I could not get there. I just thought, I just could not like them at all. But because of this thing about change, I thought, okay, if I'm different and I'm wanting to acknowledge that, then maybe these do look good on me. Maybe I just think they don't because I'm not seeing the person that I'm used to seeing when I look in the mirror. So So I got them. Hating them. I got them. For that experimentation and for what Sherry had said on the cushion, change.
That's great.
So it's been kind of fun because they have kind of grown on me. I don't know if I really like them that much yet, but I don't hate them anymore.
So someone has just been really willing to explore change and having fun with
just
it.
Just for fun, yeah.
Just having fun.
Yeah.
Okay, great. It's our time. We'll catch the left side of the room next week. Thank you.